Mountain State Mysteries contains adult content that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Mark.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is about a woman who seemed to have it all. A loving husband, a 19-month-old daughter, a family who loved her, and plans for the future. That is, until two men stole it all away from her. This is the case of Patricia Sue Richmond. Patricia Sue Brogan Richmond was born on February 23, 1954, to Thelma Jean Thompson Brogan and Homer Harrison Brogan. In 1971, between her junior and senior year, Susie was dating Bruce Richmond. The two got married in Parisburg, Virginia. Susie ended up dropping out of high school due to her getting pregnant with their daughter, Angela Arlene, and giving birth in March of 1972. The couple would move to Pluto Road in Shady Spring, West Virginia. Everything was perfect in Susie's life. That is, until November 8, 1973. The morning of November 8, 1973 started out as a normal day for Susie. She was wearing a white dress, a blue sweater, white boots, and a red ribbon tied in her black wig. She dropped off Angie at her parents' home in Beaver, West Virginia at 10:30 a.m. Thelma said in an interview with the Raleigh Register, quote, "It was 10:45 a.m. on Thursday when she left. I know because she asked me what time it was. I'll never forget that day," end quote. According to Susie's mom, Thelma, Susie was going to deliver some Amway products to customers on Old Crow Road in Beaver. After dropping off the products, Susie met up with her friend before she took her grandmother to Ransom's Market in Beaver. After taking her grandmother to Ransom's Market, Susie was seen at the Amoco service station around noon, the same Amoco service station that Margie Dodd was abducted from. Susie was driving her orange 1970s Volkswagen Beetle with the West Virginia license plate 7D-2267. After she left the Amoco station, she drove her grandmother home. For some reason, Susie did not return to her parents' home like she was going to.
As the day went on, Thelma got more and more worried about her daughter. So she called the police to report Susie as a possible missing person. She was, of course, told to wait 24 hours to a couple of days because her daughter may have simply ran off. The hours turned into days, and there was still no word from Susie. Bruce felt like something was wrong, so he posted a $1,000 reward, which would be $7,217.55 in 2024. The reward was for any information leading to the return of Susie. Over 100 of Susie's friends and relatives started to organize search parties to search the area. The search included a helicopter to look for possible car accidents that cannot be seen on foot. Bruce even went up to the sky twice in a friend's airplane in hopes to find Susie's orange Volkswagen Beetle. What no one knew while searching is that tips had already come in involving the disappearance of Susie.
On November 8th, the day Susie went missing, calls were being made in Minden, West Virginia, about 48 minutes away from Pluto Road, where Susie and Bruce lived. Residents reported a car that was on fire over the hill at the Concho trash dump. Thelma said in her interview with the Raleigh Register, quote, 9 days after she was missing, they found her car over an embankment near Minden. It had been saturated with gas and burned, but it sat there for about a week before anyone went to investigate it. Neighbors told me they called the police about it when it was on fire," end quote. The car was finally investigated on November 16th. In an article, it said, quote, "A burned car identified by state police as belonging to Patricia Sue Richmond, 19, of Pluto Road in Shady Spring, was found Friday over an embankment at Minden. She had been missing since November 8th, reportedly leaving her 19-month-old baby with her mother, saying she was going to visit a friend for about an hour and a half, police said. An extensive search by more than 100 friends and relatives has turned up nothing, police said. The case is being investigated by Trooper J.O. Cole of the Beckley State Police Detachment. Anyone having information concerning the woman last seen in Beaver, Old Crow Road area, should contact State Police Headquarters, end quote. Investigators with the State Police searched through the remains of the vehicle and searched the surrounding area. Sadly, there was no trace of Susie or anyone else. Authorities were able to determine that the vehicle did not go over the embankment due to an accident, but that it had been rolled over the embankment. The traces of gas showed them that it had been set on purpose. Authorities were able to find one single clue from the burnt remains of the vehicle, a gold wedding band with the name Gold Circle engraved on it. From our research, we gathered that Gold Circle was a discount department store, mostly covering Ohio, New York, Kentucky, and Western Pennsylvania. To us, it looked like it could be the same vibe as Kmart, selling clothes, bedding, jewelry, electronics. You name it, they sold it. Gold Circle stayed in business from 1967 to 1988. And from our research, there was not a Gold Circle store in West Virginia. However, authorities believe that the ring belonged to Susie. However, her family told them that it didn't. Another thing that made authorities scratch their heads was how did Susie's Volkswagen end up in Minden?
While investigators were trying to find Susie, there were two men raccoon hunting at Plum Orchard Lake in Fayette County, West Virginia. Around 11 p.m., James Shea and Harvey Williams were on the eastern shore of Plum Orchard Lake when they found the remains of Susie lying at the base of an overturned tree approximately 50 yards from the road. The men went and found the superintendent and told him they found a person's body with its, quote, head blown off, end quote. The superintendent at Plum Orchard Lake called the state police. The state of decomposition made identification impossible. When they saw a white dress and a blue sweater, they knew it was the same type of clothing Susie was wearing on the day she went missing. The state of her remains made it impossible to determine if sexual assault had occurred. Susie's dress, bra, and skirt were found wrapped around her neck. A GenCare ambulance driver said that Susie's face looked as if it had either been eaten away by animals or beaten beyond recognition.
Susie's body was taken to the Tyree Funeral Home in Oak Hill, West Virginia, where an autopsy was performed by Dr. M. Jamil Ahmed, a Beckley pathologist. Susie's body was positively identified by her dentist, who checked her teeth with dental charts. Dr. Newell said he could not immediately see any indications of other physical injury other than the decomposed face. Dr. Newell said the body must have been in a particular spot for several days. Despite the clothing being wrapped around Susie's neck, Dr. Newell said the cause of death was due to two stab wounds in the area of the left breast, which punctured the lung and caused hemorrhaging. The murder weapon was never identified, but it was determined to have a blunt end to it. Police kept investigating the crime scene, and they discovered Susie's wig with the red ribbon attached, a dental plate, and a gold chain with the emblem of a sailing ship on it.
The only thing at the crime scene that belonged to Susie was the wig with the red ribbon attached, dental plate, and a gold chain. Who it belonged to is still a mystery to this day. Police did notice one of the items of Susie's was missing. The white boots she had been wearing were not at the crime scene, or even at the scene of her burned car. One of the main questions police had in this case was how did Susie end up at Plum Orchard Lake and her car burned over an embankment in Minden, a round trip of 30 miles.
With all the media coverage of this case, police started to get some tips on what happened to Susie on November 8, 1973. Two salesmen who worked at the Murphy Mart in the Raleigh Mall area of Beckley contacted the state police. The two men reported around 1:30 p.m. on November 8th they both observed an African-American male with a petite Caucasian female with dark hair sitting inside a bright orange Volkswagen Beetle. They both said the woman did not appear to be in any distress. Something about it just felt off to them. The female was seated on the passenger side of the car while the male was in the driver's seat. They said the male seemed to be having trouble with the car as he attempted to drive out of the parking lot. To both men, the action of the man in the driver's seat were similar to those of someone who had never driven a stick shift before. They witnessed the man turn onto what was Route 19 and 21 headed north towards Mount Hope. One of the men who witnessed this thought he recognized the woman in the car, so he was smart and hurried up and got something to ride on and wrote down the car's license plate number. The day after Susie's body was found, the salesman gave the piece of paper to the police, and by what seemed just pure luck, it was the same license plate number that was on the back of Susie's car. So the state police started to wonder why Susie drove all the way into Beckley. It wasn't something that seemed to be in her plans. But from the podcast, Cold Case Crew, they have said they believe that Susie used to work at a restaurant in the area. A restaurant that is still there in the same spot today, although it may be a new building. Susie was rumored to have worked at Long John Silver's at some point and was said to still have some friends that work there. So maybe she just went there for some lunch or to stop in and say hi to a friend that was working. It did cross my mind while putting this episode together that maybe she was delivering some Amway products to someone that wasn't home and she knew they were at work. So maybe she just went there to drop them off.
30 minutes later, around 2 p.m., not one, not two, but three different coal truck drivers spotted Susie's car driving along the narrow Minden Drive. The sighting happened near where Susie's car was actually pushed over the embankment and set on fire. All three drivers said that the car was flying down the road with the windows rolled down, and the coal drivers saw two African-American men, one driving, one in the passenger seat, and a Caucasian female seated in between them. These sightings caused police to focus on the Minden area. They actually ended up finding out that one of the residents who reported Susie's car being on fire had a story they wanted to hear. A man who we were going to call Robert saw the flames from the car and went to investigate it himself. At the top of the hill, Robert saw two African-American men walking up towards the road and away from the car. Robert thought that there could have been an accident, so he asked the men if anyone had been hurt. One of the men said no and said that they had been the only ones in the car. So Robert offered to drive the men back to the main road, but the two men refused and continued on foot. Mind you, this is November in West Virginia, and we all know how cold it gets the second the sun goes down. So why did these men refuse to get into a truck to help them get away from the scene of the burning car quicker blows my mind.
However, when Robert told this encounter to the police, he described the man as African-American, ages around 19 to 20 years old. Robert described one of the men wearing what he called army pants, army jacket, and his height was around 6 foot, and his complexion was medium, and he had a slight stutter. He also noticed he had a square face diver's watch with a wide band and black boots. But what stood out to him about these boots is that the right boot's sole was built up 3 to 4 inches higher than the left boot. Robert described the other man as 5 foot 6 inches tall with a stocky build, a leather cap with built-in earmuffs, and an afro hairstyle.
With the accounts given by the salesman, truck drivers, and Robert, police think that the description of the men seemed to be a perfect match. However, the descriptions of the men were still too vague to release composite sketches. Along with this, police found it hard to put together a perfect timeline of Susie's day. Like we said earlier, Susie was last seen around noon at the Amoco service station in Beaver. 2 hours later, Susie's car and a woman thought to be Susie was seen in the Raleigh Mall, Beckley Plaza area of Beckley, roughly 6 miles away. Side note, like we said in the episode of Marjorie Dodd, this area has basically not changed, and the bank Margie worked at the time is still in the same area, so it's still exactly just 6 miles away from the service station. 30 minutes later, Susie's vehicle was spotted on Minden Drive near the Concho trash dump. From where Susie's car was dumped and where her body was dumped were 10 miles away from each other. I think this is what really stumped police in the investigation. How did they get her from point A, which would be Minden Drive, to point B, which would be Plum Orchard Lake?
To me, if Susie's car was taken to Plum Orchard Lake, people would have saw it. I mean, Scarborough is a very populated area where houses are all around, and to get on the interstate, you have to go by houses no matter what way you go.
The more Susie's friends and families pressed for questions, they began starting to receive threatening phone calls and letters mailed to them. The calls and letters basically all carried the same message: leave the matter alone, or your younger daughter Sharon's life will be in danger.
With time, this case lost the media attention, and fearful for the threats to Sharon, Thelma, Homer, and Bruce stayed as quiet as they could about Susie's case. In July of 1974, Bruce married Roberta Ayers and became a Methodist minister. And in 1989, when Angela married her husband, Bruce lit a single candle in honor of Susie. Sadly, the investigation into the murder of Patricia Sue Brogan Richmond went cold and has yet to be solved. If you have any information on the murder of Patricia Sue Brogan Richmond, please call Crime Stoppers at 304-255-STOP. That's 304-255-7867. You can even submit a tip at www.crimestoppersofraleighcounty.com or on the P3 app. You are not required to give your name and are able to submit anonymously. Courtney, do you have any final thoughts on this case?
I just feel it's another case that her family was failed. She was failed justice. And, I mean, I understand that her body was decomposed, but I also still feel at the same time that she could have possibly been sexually assaulted. Even though that the medical examiner said no, I just kind of feel that it was a possibility with her clothes and everything up around her neck. And, I mean, they would have had to hit a major vein for her to bleed out. And that'd be her cause of death. And I feel maybe some strangulation was put in there also, too. I do know that a majority of stabbing victims, it is not because they got stabbed to death. It is because there is multiple stab wounds that causes them to bleed out, and that is actually what their cause of death is, not just single-handedly them being stabbed. I hate this because her baby was robbed of a mother, and her husband was robbed of a wife, and her family was robbed of an aunt, a niece, a sister, cousin, everything, you know. Her family was robbed. And I feel that in a way that it's a possibility this could be somebody who knew the family for the fact that they were putting threats against her younger sister. Mark, do you have any final thoughts?
I kind of debated on talking about this, and I don't think I'll get into it, but there is a rumor around town about this case. I kind of believe it, and I kind of don't. If you know the rumor I'm talking about, you definitely do know what I'm talking about. I still wish they had evidence to do DNA testing on. I wish that they could find the dental plate. I wish they could do DNA on the ring, on the... There was a necklace, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I wish I could find the necklace. And, you know, I never knew this until, like, really going into this case, that I'm actually related to one of the men who found her body. I've never really been out to Plum Orchard other than one time, and I never knew about this case. I do know it's secluded, so it's literally just like happenstance that they found her, I believe. Like you, I do kind of worried about the sexual assault aspect of this case, and to me, you would have to be strangled with all of that stuff wrapped around your neck. And, you know, I know, which I don't think we left in this case, but there were different license plates. There was a license plate in the back of the car. So that kind of leads to the rumor of it not being her vehicle, that she kind of just slapped her license plate on it because she had a bug and it might have been the same color and such.
Can I say something? Uh-huh. My very first car was a 1969 Volkswagen Beetle. It was my very first car. And the way that the woman described how they were sitting in that car, there is no bench seat in that front seat.
See, I always wondered if she could have just been in, like, the back seat.
She would have had to been in the center back for it to have appeared that way.
That's the only thing I could think of.
Because in my bug, it was the driver's seat, your clutch, well, your stick shift was in the middle, and then your passenger seat.
Yeah.
And then you had a bench seat in the back.
Yeah, to me, she would have had to been in the back.
Yeah, that's the only way possible.
There was also, in other reports, Bury Mountain Road. There is no way that they could have went from Murphy Mart, where like Elder Beerman and all that stuff was, to Thurman, get up on Bury Mountain Road. Or no, it would have been, they would have had to drive through Beckley, go through Stanford, go past Prince, and loop, cut up, go by houses, and get on Bury Mountain Road, which took, me and Courtney actually did this, what, during the break?
It was October of last year we done it.
Oh, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy you remember. So, it took us 2 hours, no cell phone service. We kind of had to guess what way to go at one point. And we were kind of shocked where we, like, popped out at. So, to me, Bury Mountain Road just has never been a factor in this. To me, they went down through Mount Hope, through wherever to get to Plum Orchard Lake. They killed her and then went to Minden, burned the car to try to get rid of evidence at the Concho dump. And technically they were kind of caught in a way.
And the reason why we feel like Bury Mountain doesn't pay much of any aspect in
it, just does, it doesn't add up.
There is no way. You would have to be the most skilled driver to get down that road. There's no way somebody could have been flying down that road.
Especially with coal trucks, because that road is so small.
It's very narrow.
There was only two other vehicles on that day, on the road that day. And we passed one, and I'm like, Courtney, I don't think we can do this. She's like, you got it. You got it. And luckily, we did get it. And I mean, the road is very well graveled, so I don't know how it would have been back in the day. I figured it would have been good from coal trucks and stuff being on.
I feel like it would have been, like, if it was graveled where the coal trucks had traveled over it, it would have packed down like any other gravel road.
Yeah.
So possibly that could have gave them a little bit of speed, but even at the same aspect, I don't see them being able to fly around through there, especially with coal tracks.
Me neither. Because, I mean, if you drove, like, cut off one of those coal trucks and they went off that hill,
they were over the mountain.
They'd be over the mountain. They would go into Thurman, like, into houses, into the train depot, all of this. So, I mean, it really makes no sense. Stay tuned for the next episode, where we are going to tell you about the case of a socialite from Charleston, West Virginia. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.